Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Sometimes yesterday we were speaking about that person who met 500 to 600 awliya ikram, and he put across them the same question. And this is amongst the questions that I'd heard from Hazrat Ji Rahmatullahi time and time over. So one question was about Hoshiyar, explained yesterday. And the other question was about Aqil Kunya. Who is the intelligent? The problem in life is that every person has a definition of his own. And he's not prepared to accept that the definition I have is not right. Whereas the thing that counts is the definition that is recognized by Allah Ta'ala. You may, as much as you may say that, no, I've understood it right, but is it something that is endorsed by Allah Ta'ala? You may say the currency is right, right? Your currency is right. But does the state accept that currency? No matter how much you argue, if the state says that this currency is not recognized, counterfeit, no matter what you do, how much you cry, how much you shout, that currency is of no essence, no value. So by the same token, when we want to define something, then the sensible thing to do is to see whether this definition, is it recognized by Allah Ta'ala? Does Allah Ta'ala also approve of it? If He doesn't approve of it, then it's pointless. We shouting, ranting, raving, you know, that I have understood it correctly. Now this is a big problem, massive problem in this day. Everybody wants to learn kitabs on its own, study hadith on its own. Then they bring one hadith, and then, as though they know it all. One person took employment, and strangely took employment by a person who was claiming to be Ahl Hadith, that I know Hadith, like we see Salafi. But now, the employer, he will only employ you if you are towing his line. You must also be Salafi. Thinking like him, saying Ameen loudly, etc., then only will he accept you. Otherwise, you're out. So just to confirm the employment, he said, I'm Salafi, and he said, saying Ameen loudly, keeping his feet widely spread out in namaz, etc., how they do normally. So just to secure the job, he did this. All right. So he wrote a letter to the Shaykh Rahmatullahi after some time, that my boss, he's very strict on his ways, on his what he understands from hadith. He is very strict on that. So he's also of the opinion that the hands should be raised at the time you're going for ruku, like Shafis would do. When you're going to ruku, you're raising your hands. And then when you stand up going for sajda, you raise up your hands again for the second time. So he's of the opinion that the hands should be raised when you are going towards sajda. But then, he says, but because the hadith doesn't mention that after you have raised your hands, that you put your hands on the sides. So now, he wants us to be in this posture. In this posture, we're going to sajda. I said, he is trained and he's got it right. Me, I'm afraid now, I'll misbalance and I'll fall. In the meanwhile, if I don't do it, I'll lose my job. If I do it, I'll hurt myself. What do I do? So I explained that to my boss. You know, this thing is too hard. And you know, all your bosses, all the Salafi, the higher ranking people, they also are not kyle of this. They also don't confirm this practice here. You are isolated in this thing here. Otherwise, other senior Salafis, they don't do the same. They don't do what you are doing. So he says, my seniors, they are nowhere near Imam Abu Hanifa, Imam Shafi'i, rahmatullahi, not near them. And I don't need to listen to them, I go direct to the hadith. So when they are not even equal to Abu Hanifa and I'm not listening to the Abu Hanifa, then why would I listen to them? I got no reason to listen to them. Now, he's in a constraint, he doesn't know what to do. He studied the hadith himself and is looking for a solution. In the course of last year sometimes, one person came to me and he says, you know, these two contradictory hadiths and I want an explanation. So what is it? So he says, there's a hadith which says that a person died in death and Nabi Sam would refuse to perform his janazah namaz. And there is another hadith that is contrary to this. And that hadith says that من ترك دينا فعليا. Someone died as a debtor, then I will be responsible for his debts. So the one hadith is saying that Nabi Sam just blankly refused to perform the janazah namaz of a debtor. And the other hadith is saying directly opposite, that any person leaves behind a debt, then I am fully responsible to discharge his debt. Now, how do you reconcile this? So I told that doctor, by Dr. Saab, you give me an undertaking. What undertaking? That you're not going to study hadith yourself. You either go through a supervised study, or go through the whole alim course and study the whole thing, so you look at all the hadith that comes under the chapter, the context that the hadith came in. You won't have problems. Now you're looking at things in isolation, one thing in isolation, you won't have a problem. Then you'll confuse yourself, you'll confuse others. Now, until when I'm going to answer you? If you are interested, study the whole thing, that's fair. Like this, you're studying something in isolation, you studied one thing and you left out the other, then it's like a person, like a doctor, a crack doctor, you know. It happened in Durban, I won't mention where it happened and who it was. Crack doctor doesn't have that level of experience. And he had advised the patient that you must take a certain injection. What they call it? Penicillin, yeah. So he administered the injection and the patient went into a coma. Lucky not a foot stop. What would happen? So he was a crack doctor. He doesn't have that level of experience. 2-3 years of experience and now he wants to boast with his little bit of understanding. He didn't understand that this patient was allergic to penicillin. Had he understood this, then he wouldn't have done this. He wouldn't have made such a mistake. So the same now, people learn hadith, etc. in isolation. Then they got problems. Then they come and refer. Today they got a problem. Tomorrow there's another problem. Third day they got another problem. Now this week here there was another question that came in on the email. Second, third day now. That if you touch your private part, then there's a hadith which says that wuzu becomes compulsory. How do you explain this? Again, you create a problem for yourself because you are learning hadith in isolation. Now there's a lot of explanation to this hadith, but just for your information, now what it refers to, one explanation that is given, that if you touch that part, so wuzu has got two meanings in Arabic. One meaning of wuzu is the wuzu that we make, right? And the other meaning of wuzu is to wash your hands. So if you touch that area, then wash your hands, because it's not clean, not, you know, you touch that area, and then you're going to touch food, you're going to perform namaz. It's not hygienic, it's not right. So clean your hands, wash your hands. Now, he didn't understand that this has got two meanings. When he didn't understand it, I didn't know how to apply it. So coming back to the doctor, I said, doctor, you give me the promise that you're not going to study it yourself. Either you want to study the whole thing, from A to Z, or then you refer to someone else. You can't say, I don't know it, and I know it again. You either know it or you don't know it. If you don't know it, then you ask. And if you know it, then there's no need for you to ask them. So now, you don't want to say, I don't know it. And you don't say that, I know it. So where do you stand? So if you don't know it, you ask. And if you don't know it, say that, I don't know it, I'm going to ask now. So you don't study the hadith in isolation. The masail that are given to you, you won't study the thing. See, because the masail, the rules are from hadith. But those people that have taken all the pains to show you masail, sometimes just for one masla, they go through 100 hadith. And then they come to one conclusion, right? So if you want to do the same thing, then you go through the same 200 hadith and come and arrive to the same conclusions. Now you don't want to go through that and you want to circumvent, take a shortcut. It's not right, not right of you. It's not fair to the science. Every science has to be respected. So the doctor gave me an undertaking, or I will listen to you. So I told him, see, the first hadith, when Nabi Sam refused to perform the namaz of a debtor, that hadith refers to a situation where the Baytul Mal, the public treasury, did not have enough money. Now a person dies and he's in debts. So how must his debt be settled? The public treasury doesn't have wealth. When he doesn't have the wealth, then how his debt must be settled? So therefore Nabi Sam refused to perform and lead the janazah namaz. Why do you take a debt when you don't have the means to make arrangements for the settlement? Why did you put yourself into debts? So it's a warning for the person. If you have got the arrangements to settle the debt, it's a different thing. But no arrangements and you just die like this. So that was a warning Nabi Samet cautioned that don't do this in future. So he gave a very severe warning that he just refused to lead the janazah namaz. And the second hadith which says, مَنْ تَرَكَ دَيْنًا فَعَلَيَّ, person dies as a debtor, then I am responsible for it. Right? Says, he's left a debt. That was at a time where the public treasury had a lot of wealth, had a lot of surplus wealth. When it had a lot of surplus wealth, the money is for the public. Now, poor person, he died, leaving debts, then I will settle it. So you see now, I'm not understanding the context, then you know how to reconcile. Then either you're going to be rejecting the hadith and saying it's safe, or you're going to keep yourself in a quandary now. Yeah, what does it mean? Your mind is being tossed all the time. So our work is look into the rulings, not into the hadith itself. And if you want to study the hadith, then be fair to the science. Learn it from A to Z, from Alif to Wasalam. Study the whole thing. You won't have any problems then. But now you're not learning it, and then you're confusing yourself and confusing others. It's not right then. So anyway, coming back to this person here, and he says, my boss says, no, see, I didn't even listen to Abu Hanifa. We all listen to my leaders, the Salafi Imams. Their knowledge is nowhere near Abu Hanifa and Imam Shafi Rahmatullah. The Salafi is saying that. So I didn't listen to them. Where will I listen to these people? So anyway, now his job is on the line. So he wrote up to the Sheikh Uladis Rahmatullah that my job is on the line now. And if I don't raise my hands after the ruku, going to sajda, I must keep it in that posture, I'm going to sajda. Now it's a difficult thing. Maybe a youngster with a slim body doing some gymming around, he'll get it right. But everybody can't get that right. So the Shaykh says the hadith came in my mind straight away. Because that's his job. He was a Shaykh of hadith. Like he was an encyclopedia of hadith. So he knew the hadith, he knew the application. He says, so many places, Bukhari, Tirmizi, Abu Dawud has got the hadith that Hatta yastaqirra kullu udwin makanahu. Hatta yarjia kullu udwin makanahu. Some place Hatta yastaqirra kullu udwin makanahu. So, if Rasulullah SAW, for example, had stood in a certain posture, right, then he allowed the limb to be at its place. Now, where is the place of the hand? The place of the hand is on the sides. When you stand up, how you stand up? With your hands on the side. Hatta yastaqirra aw qala yarji'a kullu udwin fi makanihi. Then he stood up until the hand came back at its place. Now he sent the hadith, that man rejoiced. He showed it to the imam. the boss of his boss, hey, but I'm studying hadith now, why didn't I get that hadith? How come he got it, I didn't get it? See now, this selective study, this immaturity, naivety, and then people pass this type of statements that you're following Abu Hanifa or you're following Rasulullah Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Now this is a pure line of deception. What the man is telling you, that don't follow Abu Hanifa, follow me. And we're saying, oh what, you know what, Imam Abu Hanifa, Imam Shafi, all of them, they are masters not only of fiqh but hadith as well. They knew, literally they knew millions of hadith with the chain of narrators. And they knew where it's applicable. And Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi is a tabi'i, riwayatan and ru'yatan as well. When he's a tabi'i, he saw the sahaba. So he saw what was in the household of nubuwwat. So the one that knows what's in the house, the one that's in the house, he knows it. As compared to the person that's outsider. Your house, you are inside the house, you know what is placed. And an outsider, outsider has got second-hand information. And you belong to the house, you got first-hand information. You know what is placed, which place. You know everything exactly. But the one that is an outsider, that he is dependent on the information that is received. He doesn't know it so well. So Abu Hanifa is from the house. He saw the Sahaba Kiram. He's from the house. He saw it exactly direct. And you are dependent on the information that reached you. So whose knowledge is more thorough? Your knowledge or his knowledge? Same applies to Imam Shafi rahmatullah, as though they are from the household. Imam Malik as though they are from the household. So they saw it like you never see it. The level of taqwa is so high that you will still dream about it. You will still dream about it. It's far, far higher than yours. You're talking of Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi. For 40 years, he performed Fajr namaz with Isha wuzu, with Ramadan and everything else. Show me one person who did that Isha Fajr namaz with Isha wuzu. Young or old, alright. The old, maybe now the stomach is, engine is gone old, right? But the young, show me one youngster who's got such a powerful V8 engine. One person. So this Imam could manage it for 40 years. Non-stop, Safar, Hadar, all that he could do it. So his level of taqwa is at a different level. So you don't feature anywhere near him. So then don't compare yourself against him. Because you don't feature anywhere. Just be humble, understand that I don't know it. Then ask and refer. But you don't know it and you don't want to say I don't know it. Now I want to go and refer to it. And then you bring a confusion to yourself. Then you refer this type of questions. So you get this thing all the time. So we are talking about this Aqil Konen. Who's that intelligent person? Who's that wise person? And I say, the important thing is to understand the definition of everything. You got the definition right, you're getting it right. You're on path. But you don't have the definition of things, and yet you make your own definition, and you feel that the definition that you come up with is right, you're off. Off the course completely. To get the definition right, and you will simplify the path for yourself. You make it easy for yourself. It's so easy. Yesterday, one friend of mine, and he was complaining about his son having a very acute sickness. So for that moment, I felt perturbed. Then I'm thinking, what's the reason? Then Allah Pak put in my mind, by the grace of Allah Ta'ala, وَلِلَّهِ مَا فِي السَّمَاوَاتِ وَمَا فِي الْأَرْضِ. Everything belongs to Allah Ta'ala. He has got the right to decide. And our duty is to say, آمَنَّا وَصَدَّقْنَا. We believe. Our right is to say, سَمِعْنَا وَأَطَعْنَا. We listen and we obey. Why? No, that's not our business. That's the duty, that's the work of Allah Ta'ala. He did it. He knows why he did it. We don't need to ask why you did it for him, why didn't you do it for this person, why did you do it for me? That's not your business. It's Allah Pak's word. He will do what he wants, how he wants to do it, he'll do it. Like you are designing your home, right? When you're designing your home, so one section of the home you have designed for the toilet, another section for the lounge, right? the next section for the bedroom and the kitchen, whatever. So if the toilet, all the filth is going, if that section comes and complains to you, what wrong have I done to all the filth comes onto me? You could have put me onto the lounge place. And the lounge could be on my place, you know. But what wrong have I done? That all the filth comes onto me. What will you tell that piece of the earth? But you just keep quiet. This is my house. I will do as I want. Won't you say the earth? Won't you say that? If the earth had a tongue to talk, you would say, this belongs to me. I got the right. So, what a great comfort it brings to your mind. Okay, it is the word of Allah Ta'ala. It is the property of Allah Ta'ala. He will do as He wishes. His work is to decide. His work is to declare. Our work is to listen. Sami'na wa ata'na. Allah, you said it. But we'll ask you, Allah will keep begging you for af and afiyat. Forgiveness and ease. Forgiveness and ease. We'll keep asking you. Because we can't manage it. So if you are beset with a trial as well, we'll still ask you for forgiveness and ease. We will not become bold and say, Allah, you can try me out. And I'm a champion. We won't show our boldness. Rather, we'll show our weakness. Allah, I can't manage. Make it easy for me. So if it's a trial, He'll make it easy for you. Why He did it? He knows why He did it. Then when I thought like this, Allah put another thought in my mind. So I'm just sharing the thought. You know? You see, in Surah Kahf, Khizr al-Islam killed that one young boy, turned 9 years of age, because it was decreed for that boy that if he comes of maturity, he'll go into kufr, and he'll influence yuriqiqawma abawahuma. He will influence his parents as well. So Allah Ta'ala took him away in infancy, no hisab. Person dies in infancy, no hisab for him. Had he come of age, he would have done this. So Allah Ta'ala wanted to bless the parents, so He took the child away in infancy. So if the child, for example, he's got a problem, mental problem, whatever problem, right? Now, he's equal to this person here. Now, for that person, there's no hisab now. Absolute no hisab. He's freed of all hisab. It could have been decreed for the child that if he'd come of age, then he would have gone wrong. Could have been a disgrace, an embarrassment for the parents. So Allah Ta'ala brought him into this situation so that He saves him from the future disgrace, future embarrassment. You see, so but because the akhirat is not before us, hey, why it happened, how it happened, ek shek challi ki tarah se hamara zehn chalta rehta hai. In Gujarati, shek challi, say shek challi. So there's no need to think by one way. Think just one way. It's a word of Allah Ta'ala. He decides, He disposes. It's His work to decide, our work to listen. We are slaves. What else? Can we say we've got any control, any authority? It's His decision. So perhaps it may have been a mercy, an act of kindness for the parents. On account of the piety of the parents, Allah Ta'ala blessed the child in this manner, that He made him invalid. When he's invalid, now the child will not go off. There's no chance for him to go off. And the parents are also saved. So both, it's a blessing for the parents, and though we find it a little bit difficult, then my mind started working again. Then I saw in the life of Abu Subhan Adin, one person, his child was similar, and he asked Mawla Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullahi for dua. Mawla Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullahi made dua, the child came right. The day the child came right, Mawla Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullahi couldn't control his tearing, his crying. And he says, you know, until the child was like this, then he was absolved of all interrogation, sawal, hisab, kitab. Now we have made him responsible. Now what's going to happen to this child? When he was like this, he was an invalid. When he's an invalid, then there's no sawal jawab for him. Absolutely clear. Rufi al-qalamu an thalathin. An innaimi hatta yastayqis. Right? And there's three people. One person is mentally challenged. One person is a sleeping person, etc. One person is an immature. So he is marful qalam. He is absolved of all responsibility. Right? We find it difficult. That's a different thing altogether. See, the belief brings so much of relaxation and comfort. One man came here and he says, you know, we are involved in an accident and my wife's both feet were amputated. But now, you know, I loved her so much and still love her, in spite of all this. And we are young. I am 28, she's about 24. In the prime of our youth, this is gone, this has happened. But the shocking thing is, after this happened, then my wife saying, Allah Ta'ala, I'm so grateful to you, I'm so thankful to you. I'm so grateful to you, I'm so thankful to you. I'm wondering now what this chacha is telling. Not a chacha, he's young, 28. What this brother is saying? So he says that, no, my wife is saying to Allah Ta'ala, I'm so thankful, so grateful to you. Why? She says that, you know, I'm an outgoing person. I like to go to the malls, bioscopes, all these things of things, this type of things. But I knew in my mind it's not the right thing. But it was my tabiat now to be a little bit outgoing, going here, there, everywhere, mixing up and all these type of things. Now Allah Ta'ala taken my legs away. Now I can't go to these places. So Allah Ta'ala has relieved me of that sin. So there is a different dimension to look at life. Not just narrow tunnel vision. It's another, akhirat is a different thing. Anyway, we're coming back to the question. Aakil kone? Aajkal to sab aakil ho gaye hai. Aakil bahut kam hai. Everybody's aakil. Aakil, you get very few. Right? And I think it's a fact, you know. When I say aakil, everybody is eaters. You're eating or you're just working to eat. Better lifestyle. Have kebab, have this, that, whatever. But intelligence, I think that is something that is very, very, it's something that is like dying. Dying. You can hardly find real intelligence. So anyway, now, the question is this, that aakil kon hai? Who is the intelligent? So this question was put across 500 to 600 awliya. And I heard this direct from Hazrat Rahmatullahi, right? And all these 500 to 600 awliya gave the same answer, exactly the same answers. The answer was, jo jisne apne khuda ko pehchan liya. The one that had recognized Allah Ta'ala, who's got the ma'rifat of Allah Ta'ala. He who's got the ma'rifat of Allah Ta'ala, then he is intelligent. Now ma'rifat, what is ma'rifat? See? You know I think I was still studying 1977, 76, 77, I was still going to India. So we went for some tickets and all that. So my cousin took me. I don't drive and I wasn't driving then also, so he took me to the AA office. So it was a Friday, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and we went to the office, so there was a Muslim woman that saw to us. So I just told my cousin, but today is a Jummah, this girl should have at least put on a trouser, hijab, you know, and a scarf on her head. How can she do this? On a Jummah, how can she carry on like this? I mean, a Muslim, all the time she needs to be dressed correctly. But now it's a Friday, and then she's dressed up like this, scantily dressed. How can you accept this? I told him on the quiet when she was gone in. But that clever cousin of mine, even I told that auntie. Least did I expect him to do something like that. But he went and blurted it out. So she went into a tangent. And she said, what do you know about Islam? I know about haqiqat. I know about ma'rifat. I know about tariqat. And my sheikh, my peer has given me one jubbah and one turban, you know, as a mark, as a symbol of a great person. So I'm thinking to myself now, what is he going to do with the turban? Or what is she going to do with the jubbah? So it's just terms. What's the definition? What's the underlying meaning? They don't know it. So coming back now, aakil kone? Jisne apne khuda ko pehchan liya. I tell you, by it's about understanding something correctly. Understanding the definition, realizing, recognizing. You know it, you'll work for it. But you don't know it, you won't work for it. See, just look at it. Just one example of recognition, right? Our parents, they recognize wealth. importance of wealth, right? We recognize also the importance of wealth. Call it wealth, call it material security, material stability, whatever. But it boils down to wealth, right? You can give different names to it, material security or wealthy or whatever, whatever. But it comes down to one and the same thing, right? So we understood the importance of material security. When we understood the importance of material security, we sacrifice, sometimes we sacrifice, on an average, we sacrifice approximately 13 years of the child's life. From pre-primary to matric, how many years? 13 years. Just because we recognized, we understood what was material security, that the child must be able to stand on his feet. That's an average. And there is a good percentage that will go for higher studies. That the higher studies is about 7-8 years sometimes, right? So about 20 years of the child's good life, prime time of his life, is gone just to gain the type of material security. So when you understood what was material security, you gave the type of time. You understand what is money. If that money goes, you had 1 million rand, for example, savings, right? And everything got lost then, how do you go helter-skelter? Hey, my life earnings. What is gone now? So you go helter-skelter. Why? You understand, you recognize the power of wealth. When you understood the power of wealth, then it made you helter-skelter. Right? You understood the importance, what wealth can do, the power in wealth, what it will do, the security it will give you, the itminan and sukoon it will give you. You understood all these things here. All, you see all your needs in that wealth. Your medical care, you are sustained, right? Your traveling expenses, your home, your comfort, everything you can see it in that wealth. So you understood, you got the recognition, you got the understanding of wealth. So then for you to sacrifice is easy. Man has got a fever, he's laid down with a fever. But he knows that I must go to the business. He'll take a double dose and he'll go to the business. Why? I understand the power of wealth. He understands the might of wealth, the clout that is in wealth, he understands it. So he'll take that double dose, he'll go to a doctor, ask him to give him a double injection, but I must go to the business. Why? He understands the clout in wealth. When he understood and he got the marifat of wealth, then that marifat made him sacrifice, sick, no sick, Monday, Friday, Saturday, any day. But he understands the power of wealth. So for him to make a sacrifice, it's not a problem. For him to fly over to China, it's not a problem. Right? For him to fight in court with his brother over wealth, it's not a problem. He's not worried about the disgrace and the embarrassment that I'm bringing my brother to court. And you have a case where the man calls his father to court. He understands what wealth is. So for that wealth, he'll go to any length. Why? He's got the understanding, the marifat of wealth. When he got the understanding and the marifat of wealth, that thing then pushed him to at any length. To leave the home at 2 o'clock in the morning, to be in good time, in free state, I need to do my business there, is not a problem. I understand the power of wealth. I know that from I leave 2 o'clock, I'll be there at about 6 o'clock. And 7 o'clock, the shops are opening. I'm getting there at the right time. So for him to make that sacrifice is an easy thing. For his dear darling, his girl, his daughter, you know, whose chastity is so important to him. But for him to break a chastity and send her to this university and that university until the chastity has been ripped, he's not bothered about it because he understands the power of wealth. That wealth, what will do for this child here? What that wealth will do for the child, he's not worried about the chastity. The wealth means so much to him. So for that wealth, any type of sacrifice, any type of qurbani, any type of difficulty, he's got that recognition. Khuda kare ke khuda ki aisi marifat hame hasil ho jaye. So this is called marifat. If you got that minuscule level of marifat of Allah Ta'ala, then you will be a different person. You will be a totally different person. But the problem is we got the marifat of wealth. So to make any type of effort, to sit on a computer 10 hours, 5 hours, 8 hours, getting a thing right. An engineer will sit, an architect will sit
7 hours, 8 hours straight, he will do it. He'll get the whole thing right. He knows what's behind it. Architect is sitting behind a plan and he's working out something. It took him about 20 hours to do it. And he's giving all his time and he's doing, getting it right. He knows that beyond this is 10 million rands, 2 million rands, 1 million rand. I'm getting from this whole project, if it's 10 million rand, I'm getting 15% out of it. So he knows what it is. He knows what's behind it. He knows that there's a 1 million rand job. And my 20 hours going to this, I know the returns. But if we had the recognition of Akhirat, we had the recognition of Allah Ta'ala, recognition of Jannat, recognition of the rewards that Allah Ta'ala promised, then we would have been like that architect. We would have been like that engineer. He knows what's there. But because we don't relate, we don't understand, we don't identify. It's a dream now, it may happen, may not happen. We just took it as a dream. So we take it very lightly. Now, the question is then, how do we build up this type of ma'rifat? The ma'rifat that we have got for wealth, this type of ma'rifat, if we have for Jannat, for Akhirat, for reward, how do we build it up? How do we build up? So that we can employ our energies in the right direction. See, when it comes to the end, then it mustn't be, let it not be that Malakul Maut is coming and then we saying to Allah Ta'ala, لولا أخرتني إلى أجل قريب فأصدق وأكون من الصالحين. Now you're seeing Jannat and Jahannam. At that time, you are ending up, right? Then you are showing, Allah Pak is showing you Jannat and showing you Jahannam. And then you are thinking now, when I'm seeing the picture of Jannat, hey, I lost out big way. I missed it. I lost out and I lost big way. Allah Pak, give me some few moments. I can just sort myself out, make some adjustments and come back. وَلَنْ يُؤَخِّرَ اللَّهِ. Then after that, once the time comes in, once the time sets in, then you don't get any type of respite. It's gone. Time is gone, it's gone. Then there's no respite. That's the system of Allah Ta'ala. You got that respite till that moment. But when the time clocks in, then you can't change. You can't alter it after that. Not one second, not one moment. وَلَنْ يُؤَخِّرَ اللَّهُ نَفْسًا إِذَا جَاءَ أَجَلُهَا. So, this is the mystery of life. It's just one chance and last chance. You don't get a second chance. So in this, make it or break it. Win or lose. And the secret is recognize it, exploit it. Recognize it, and after you've recognized it, then exploit it. And then you see. And then you see that effort of yours, you know, obviously, when it's crowned by the grace of Allah Ta'ala, it comes with the grace of Allah Ta'ala, but Allah Pak wants you to make an effort. You see in your worldly affairs, right? Allah Pak wants you to make an effort. Start off a business, and I will grace you. You do the right things, I will grace you. But you sit in your home, and you want the type of grace, it doesn't happen generally. It can happen, maybe you play a jackpot, didn't do any work, and you just won a million rand overnight. It can happen. But generally, it doesn't happen. It's not a plan, not a system. Right? The system is that you start, you work. And Allah Pak, there is a way, Allah Pak will give you something. Give you something, something solid, something secure, He'll give it to you. But He wants you to make an effort. Right? So the same rule that you apply for your worldly needs and worldly comforts, apply the same rule for the everlasting home. We believe in Akhirat. You know, the Quran Sharif starts off, أَلَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْغَيْبِ. We believe in the unseen. We didn't see Jannat, we believe in it. We didn't see Jahannam, we believe in it. We didn't see the Malaika, we believe. We didn't see, in life, we didn't see Nabi Sallam, but we believe. We didn't see a revelation coming to Nabi Sallam, but we believe in it. We didn't see the day of Qiyamah, but we believe in it. Don't we believe? So this is the whole mystery. That we haven't seen the Akhirat, but we believe in it, as though it's real. Now the story about Malik bin Dinar, right? And he spoke to that youngster, 100,000 dirhams, right? So 100,000 dirhams, how much would it be about? Because 200 dirhams is about 5,000 rands, right? 200 dirhams is about 5,000 rands, right? So just try and multiply. 100,000 would be about how much? About how much? About 2.5 million, approximately. Accountants up. About 2.5 million, right? So the youngster is convinced, and as an investment for his hereafter, not even seeing it, just listening to it as an investment for the hereafter, he laid out the 2.5 million. That's called ghaib. Now, sometimes you wonder how it happened. He guaranteed him a place in Jannat. So there's a hadith in Abu Dawud. Let me share that hadith, then you'll understand this thing here, right? I think it was Anas bin Nazr, radiyallahu anhu, and it was his sister or his auntie. There was a small altercation. In the altercation, she hurt someone, and that person's tooth broke. So the whole case came to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, because there was an altercation, and she hurt the person, and that person's tooth broke. So in Islam, injuries like for like, right? You bust someone's nose, he's got the right to bust your nose. You bust his eyes, he's got the right to bust the eye, right? You took away a life, he's got the right to take away life. And there isn't anything that can be equal to Islamic law. Because Islamic law is divine. When it's divine, you can't compare, it's uncomparable. There's no substitute for it. See, the Quran speaks about a thief, right? That his hand must be amputated. Now they said, what the world said, that this is now barbaric, right? When they said that it's barbaric, then they put him into a trial, a little prison, whatever, and threw the person out of jail, right? But when they showed that little bit of leniency and kindness to the prisoner, what happened? What was the ramification? What was the consequence? What was the outcome? The outcome is when you did away with the law of Allah Ta'ala and you brought up your own solution, now, look at it, right? Any person living any part of the world, he doesn't feel himself secure. Right? He doesn't feel, because you try to replace the law of Allah Ta'ala. In your home, you don't feel secure. With the burglar guards, you don't feel secure. With the patrol, you don't feel secure, right? Right? With the police also patrolling, you still don't feel secure. So many levels of security, but you still don't feel secure. Your CCTV, you still don't feel secure. So many levels. Now the wealthy are talking of living in, what they call it nowadays, estates. Yeah. But then, out of the estate, then still you're not secure. In the estate, all right, some security. But out, the moment you step out, again you're insecure. Why? Because you try to replace the law of Allah Ta'ala. Or to or, even the police station is insecure. They have to have a security over the police station. Why? Because the law of Allah Ta'ala, you felt that it was barbaric. Now the law of Allah Ta'ala, from 10 million people, one person's hand is amputated. But that thing is advertised, the whole world sees it. Hey, this one stole. So, you see Makkah, Medina, Munawwara. I don't say they're 100%, right? I'm not saying they're 100%. But they've got some system about security and all that. They've got some Islamic law, some awareness and some consciousness. Maybe it's the only part, and only place in the world a woman can leave a hotel room and come down at 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, cruise to the haram, and come back to a hotel apartment, no fear. Man has got a jewelry shop, right, in Makkah or Medina, right in the front line he's got. And those jewelry shops, not like our jewelry shops, ours is like a small, they'll buy you, with chains they'll buy you, right? They've got so much of jewelry inside, but they have got the heart to just suspend a curtain over the jewelry shop and go for namaz, go for 2 hours and come back. And no fear, absolutely no fear. That Islamic law, there's no substitute. So a man is feeling secure with his wealth, with his wife, with his children. I ask you, in any part of the world, can any woman leave her home, walk on foot and go out of home? Any part of the world. The little bit of Islamic consciousness and awareness and what it does to a person. So anyway, coming back to this hadith, Anas ibn Nadr, and the truth was struck. And when the truth was struck, so it came to Rabbi Sam said, Kitabullah al-Qisas. The law of Allah Ta'ala is this type of injury, equal for equal. You bust the tooth, she's got the right to bust your tooth as well. You have broken her tooth, so she's got the right to break your tooth. Anas ibn Nadr is saying, no, Ya Rasulullah, no, this, my aunt's tooth will never be broken today. And Nabi Sam is telling him, no, it's the command of Allah Ta'ala, and the tooth has to be broken. And he's saying, Wallah, by Allah, my aunt's tooth will never be broken today. He said that for the second time, and the victim said, Ya Rasulullah, alright, we'll settle for something else. So you got a right, tooth for tooth, or you can ask for blood money. So the one tooth, right, would be approximately how much? 5 camels. Huh? 5 camels. Yeah. The blood money for breaking one tooth is 5 camels. Right? So the victim said, alright, we'll settle for 5 camels. We won't ask for a tooth. So Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam said, Inna min ibadillah, there are some servants of Allah Ta'ala, lo aqsama ala Allah la abarrahu. Some servants of Allah are such, right? If they take an oath, trusting Allah Ta'ala, Allah Ta'ala will see to it, Allah Ta'ala, He allows their oath to be fulfilled. Lo aqsama ala Allah la abarrahu. There are some servants, and their trust and their conviction in Allah Ta'ala is at that level. If they take an oath, Allah Ta'ala, this will happen like this. Allah Ta'ala will make it happen. So this Malik bin Dinar, he's trusting in Allah Ta'ala that do this and I will secure a home for you in Jannat. So he had that level of trust in Allah Ta'ala and yaqeen. And when he made the dua, then Allah Ta'ala made it happen. But now this is for that selected servant. Everybody can't say that. Now you saw Malik bin Dinar doing it, and you want to imitate. Yeah? Right. You know, is a word as naz, you know, you take pride, right? Someone takes pride, like the wife takes pride over the husband. She shows like some attitude. So she's got that beauty, so she can show a little bit of pride and attitude, right? But if you don't have the pride and attitude, you don't have the pride, you don't have the beauty, can you show that? You don't have any beauty, can you show the little bit of attitude? So that's what the poet says. If you don't have the beauty of Yusuf, then at least what you could do is the tear of Yaqub alayhi salam. You don't pretend to be what you aren't. You are at that level of piety and righteousness, you can take the type of an oath. But you're not there, then don't pretend. Then be in tears like Yaqub alayhi salam. Allah Ta'ala grant us tawfiq to understand things rightly. We spoke about hadith, not doing it ourselves. If you want to do it, study the whole thing. Otherwise, it's unfair to the science of hadith. And then we spoke about this. Lo aqsama ala Allahi la abarra, right?
Mulana Ahmed Katrara is requested to come to the front and make the dua.
Allahumma salli ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala ali Sayyidina Muhammad. صلاة تنجينا بها من جميع الأهوال والآفات وتقضي لنا بها جميع الحاجات وتطهرنا بها من جميع سيئات وترفعنا بها عندك على الدرجات وتبلغنا بها أقصى الغايات من جميع الخيرات في الحياة وبعد الممات إنك على كل شيء قدير ربنا ظلمنا أنفسنا وإن لم تغفر لنا وترحمنا لنكونن من الخاسرين ربنا هب لنا من أزواجنا وذرياتنا قرة عين واجعلنا للمتقين إماما ربنا لا تؤاخذنا إن نسينا واخطأنا ربنا ولا تحمل علينا إصرا كما حملت على الذين من قبلنا ربنا ولا تحملنا ما لا طاقة لنا به واعف عنا واغفر لنا وارحمنا واعف عنا واغفر لنا وارحمنا واعف عنا واغفر لنا وارحمنا أنت مولانا فانصرنا على القوم الكافرين ربنا لا تزغ قلوبنا بعد إذ هديتنا وهب لنا من لدنك رحمة إنك أنت الوهاب ربنا إنك جامع الناس ليوم لا ريب فيه إن الله لا يخلف الميعاد اللهم أصلح لنا شأننا ولا تكلنا إلى أنفسنا طرفة عين ولا تنزع منا صالح ما أعطيتنا يا أرحم الراحمين يا الله يا رحمن يا رحمن يا أرحم الراحمين يا الله forgive all our sins يا الله in the darkness of the night and the openness of the day يا الله intentionally and intentionally we have committed every sin in the book يا الله if it is not your fazal and karam يا الله we will be nowhere in this world يا الله have mercy upon us يا الله have mercy upon us يا الله shower your infinite mercy upon us يا الله envelop us with your infinite mercy يا ارحم الراحمين يا الله show upon us your infinite mercy يا الله we have committed every sin يا الله forgive our sin يا ارحم الراحمين يا الله forgive our parents يا الله forgive our children يا الله those who are disobedient يا الله show them the straight path يا الله those who have left us fill their qabr with nur يا الله those who are sick يا الله give them شفاء كاملة عاملة مستجلة يا ارحم الراحمين let us live according to the sunnah of Nabi Kareem صلى الله عليه وسلم let us die according to the sunnah of Nabi Kareem صلى الله عليه وسلم let us revive every sunnah of Nabi Kareem صلى الله عليه وسلم يا الله save us from the punishment of Jahannam يا الله save us from the punishment of the qabr يا الله when there is Maidan al-Hashr يا الله let us be under the shade of your arsh يا الله let us get our books in our right hand يا الله when is sawal and jawab يا الله when we are be Christian يا الله do not disgrace us in front of Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam do not disgrace us in front of the sahaba ikram awliya Allah in front of our parents in front of our children Ya Allah, have mercy upon us. Ya Allah, let us cross pool sirat like lightning. Ya Allah, let us enter Jannat without reckoning. Ya Rahman Rahimin, when you read the Surah Rahman, Ya Allah, keep us amongst the first saf. Ya Allah, save us from every type of your wrath and your anger. Ya Allah, change our akhlaqi razila into akhlaqi hamida. Ya Allah, save us from calamities, tragedies, musibat. Shower upon us, Ya Allah, your infinite mercy. Ya Arhamar Rahimin, those who are in financial straits, Ya Allah, remove their financial straits. Ya Allah, those who are suffering in the world, Ya Allah, remove them from the crutches of the oppressors. Ya Allah, let Islam be arm and tam in the dunya. Ya Allah, let the winds of Hidayat travel into every part of the dunya. Ya Arhamar Rahimin, all our asatiza and our mashayikh, Ya Allah, through their barakah we have got the deen. Ya Allah, if they are living, Ya Allah, give them khair and barakat and afiyat. And if they have left this world, Ya Allah, fill their qabr with nur and raise their stages to the Jannatul A'la. رَبَّنَا اغْفِرْ لَنَا وَلِإِخْوَانِنَا الَّذِينَ سَبَقُونَا بِالْإِيمَانِ وَلَا تَجْعَلْ فِي قُلُوبِنَا غِلًّا لِلَّذِينَ آمَنُوا رَبَّنَا إِنَّكَ رَؤُوفٌ رَحِيمٌ رَبَّنَا اغْفِرْ لَنَا وَلِإِخْوَانِنَا الَّذِينَ سَبَقُونَا بِالْإِيمَانِ رَبَّنَا اغْفِرْ لَنَا وَلِوَالِدَيْنَا ولأساتذتنا ولمشايخنا ولمن له حق علينا ولمن وصيانا بالدعاء الخير ولجميع المؤمنين والمؤمنات والمسلمين والمسلمات الأحياء منهم والأموات إنك سميع قريب مجيب الدعوات يا كافية المهمات في الدارين توفنا مسلمين والحقنا بالشهداء والصالحين غير خزايا ولا ندامة ولا مفتونين سبحان ربك رب العزة عما يصفون وسلام على المرسلين والحمد لله رب العالمين